Now to the small screen and to two comedies, or maybe they're better described as traumedies. This is a word I learnt this week. I like it a lot. It's one of the traumedies is Australian, one is American, and they're both about people flailing about making questionable life decisions. And giving us her perspective is our resident TV critic, Lauren Carroll Harris.
Hey,
hello,
Jason.
Lauren. Now, a few weeks ago, you were talking about, you gave a shout out to this show, which you said marks a major step forward for the representation of disability on screen in Hollywood.
I think it does. It's called Special, and it's Netflix's first 15-minute sitcom. It's really funny, really warm, really bright, and it's by Ryan O'Connell, who's the only gay disabled lead on TV right now, which is pretty major. And I reckon he's actually something of a bit of a little genius, you know, at the art of the sitcom. He plays himself. He writes autobiographically, and it's based on his memoir called I'm Special and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves, which I think gives a hint of the, you know, tone of darkness. Yep. Here he is in Special explaining his disability to a kid on the street who's pretty alarmed to see him.
Hey, you're walking funny. You need to go to the hospital, mister.
That's not for my fault. I have a thing. It's called cerebral palsy.
What's that?
Cerebral palsy is a disability resulting from damage to the brain before, during, or shortly after birth, and outwardly manifested through muscular incoordination.
that scream.
Yeah. So the idea is that Ryan lived this really sheltered youth. Then he got a job at this viral clickbait startup. And he realizes this denialist idea. It's easy to tell his workmates that he got hit by a car than confessing he's got this lifelong problem called
a small car accident, but he decides to say that that's actually
he pins everything on it. So he's rewriting his identity and he's really in a whole lot of denial about his internalized ableism. So Ryan O'Connell called us from LA. I do apologize for the sound quality of the phone line. He's so smart and he's such a lovely guy. He's written the show alone.
Yes, this is auteurist TV.
In a funny sitcom way. Yeah, it is.
There's no writer's room.
No writer's room. He spent 5 years as a TV writer for shows like The Will and Grace reboot. So he knows the structure. He knows the form.
He's learned in the writer's room.
Big time. So I asked him about the oddness of writing and performing a younger, more damaged, less mature version of himself, and whether that was emotionally confronting as I kind of thought it would be.
It was just my life. I just wrote authentically. I just wrote from my own experience. Like, I don't do the compare thing. I don't really overthink it too much. I just write what I know to be true. That's it. I think that's all you really can do. I think if you get too hung up on, you know, I need to get this right or I need to capture this, and you can kind of get lost in the vortex. So it was just, I think everything I wrote was just very true to my experience.
You bring gay sex to the forefront in a really humane way. What was the thinking behind that? Was it about frankness? Was it about honesty?
Yeah, it was about all those things. It was about just showing sex as I had been experiencing it for the last, like, 14 years, you know, and what I knew my friends' experiences to be. I was frustrated because it felt like whenever I saw gay sex depicted on screen or depicted off screen, as the case often was, I was just really frustrated because I felt like either there were two lanes for gay men to exist in. Either we were hypersexualized and queer as folk and, like, we, you know, screwed like rabbits and perfect bodies, or we were like eunuchs that are, you know, dicks cut off and, like, we had sex, but we had sex off screen. It didn't seem real to me either way, you know, the hypersexualization and the desexualization. So I just wanted to create a sex scene that felt honest and that captured sex in all of its awkwardness and all of its hotness and all of its, like, funniness and sadness and all the things that sex can be in any given moment. I just wanted to capture it. Again, just true to life. I really just try to operate and write at a place that is honest.
Ryan O'Connell there. And the honesty of the show is also that it's not always celebrationist. It gets to some lived experiences that are quite uncomfortable. There's a beautifully observed aspect of his relationship with his mum, which is very codependent, and they both have to figure out what both of their lives look like as he moves into independent adulthood. And I think that can be quite common for people in their situation. I'd like you to hear this clip. His mum catches him cutting himself shaving on the first day of his new job at this BuzzFeed-style place called Eggwork. woke.
I love the egg woke.
Yeah. Here, let's hear this sparkling sitcom writing.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
This is not the way you want to look for the first day of your internship. Don't you just want to stay home with me instead?
No, I'm not bailing on egg woke.
Who even reads that site? It's a bunch of silly articles.
It's not silly, okay? It's brilliant millennial lousy satire, and it's a big deal.
It's unpaid.
Rude!
I'm sorry. I just been a bit worried about you since the accident.
Mom, I fractured an elbow, okay? As far as car accidents go, it was pretty chill.
Yeah. What about your CP? Because they're gonna ask you to do these difficult things like faxing and printing and...
Yeah, well, thank God no one's faxed since the 90s. Here. Mom, it's time for me to challenge myself. Be more of an independent woman. I mean, imagine if I had died when that car hit me.
No, I'm not going there.
I'm just saying, my obituary would have been bleak lively, okay? 28 years old and I haven't done a goddamn thing.
That's a tough realization. The show's not just about disability and sexuality. It also feels a lot about this idea of aspiration for our generation and how we're all wrapped up in this culture of projecting an image of success and happiness and wealth all the time, particularly given that dramatic scenario of a media company, a startup. So I asked Ryan about this and how these shifting goalposts of adulthood are changing storytelling itself and changing coming-of-age storytelling. So here he is talking about that difference between what career success looks like and the reality of money and the bank. And just a little language warning here.
A lot of my friends and I are very successful, like, on paper, but our bank accounts have, like, not really caught up to, like, what it says on the page. Everyone's sort of living beyond their means and, like, going to, like, Tulum and, like, posting about it on Instagram, but, like, there's a reason why none of us own property.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's, like, sort of, like, we're having all these adult experiences that we feel entitled to because there are things that, like, our parents did, you know, and but we still feel entitled to this dream because we saw our parents living it, and we don't understand why things have changed. But things have changed, and the traditional workplace has completely changed, and there's not much security anymore, like job security, you know, and retirement. And, I mean, you know, America's fucked. But it's very important that we still feel like we're accomplished, you know. I still have a big bee in my bonnet about owning a house. Like, it really upsets me that I don't own a house yet, you know. And to me, I feel like when I own a house, I'll know I really made it. It's like a sign of adulthood, you know.
It is, because it's like, how do you write a coming-of-age story when all the hurdles, the rituals of coming of age have shifted or just gone altogether? As you say, the property market is crazy. The job market is psycho. I mean, and this is affecting storytelling, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It looks very, to be in your 30s today, people are definitely not hitting those milestones, or if they are, they're hitting them like way, way later. And I think there's something good about that too, because I think that no one feels beholden to that stuff anymore as much as they used to. I think that my parents' generation, they got married, they had kids because that's sort of what they were taught to do. They didn't really think about it. And I think my generation is definitely thinking about it and overthinking about it. And we're really kind of examining, like, gee, like, what is it that I want? I think, like, we're the first generation to really ask ourselves that, hence, like, the delayed milestones. But, it's sort of like the wild, wild west out here.
Ryan O'Connell, down the line from LA. I think what's beautiful about his show is that although he's writing from his life experience, it's not at all narcissistic. A lot of the physical humor is about his disability, his wonky eyes.
His dress sense.
Yeah, he's kind of preppy and cute and dorky. I think he's a big new voice in TV writing. The episode's only 15 minutes. They're bubbly. Every little bit of it is shiny, and the dialogue's so sharp. Can't wait to see what he does next.
All right, that's Special. It is on Netflix. Now we're moving to something local, but still very much in this bamboozled brand of TV comedy.
Yeah, and weird lived experience. The whole second season of The Letdown by Alison Bell and Sarah Scheller is on iView right now. Another comedy of confused, powerless protagonists. Maybe protagonist isn't even the right word. The first season of The Letdown was very much about the identity crisis of drowning in that really first tough year of parenting. It's written by women with the messy, struggling woman played by Alison Bell at the center, forming and losing, I guess, her expectations of what motherhood's really like. Here's a bite of the new season with Alison Bell's character talking to her own mother, Sarah Pierce, in a sleep-deprived haze. She's basically losing it over her daughter's first birthday.
Okay, these are plastic, but do you reckon they could pass for bamboo?
No.
Maybe I shouldn't use plastic at all. Everyone's so anti. I mean, I am too. Sophie had real cutlery at hers at the park.
Audrey, darling, what's happened to you? When you turned one, all we did was wrap up a present you already owned. I mean, they don't know what's going on at this age.
But they see the photos when they're older or note the absence of them. Sophie had a unicorn at hers. I mean, it was a pony with a horn, but it was very believable.
Sounds like Sophie wasn't loved enough as a child.
Two neurotic women, Alison Bell and Sarah Pierce, are there on the letdown. The new season feels like much more of a satire of the insanity of a lot of anxious middle-class parenting. It's very much in a swamp of Gen X dilemmas set in big renovated terraces in Sydney's inner west. Here's co-creator and co-writer, Sarah Scheller. She was talking to me about the progression and what changed from season one to season two.
We wanted to explore what it actually felt like to come home with a baby, you know, what it meant to have a baby, because it upends everything. It makes you rethink the way you understand yourself. Like it does sort of amazing psychological stuff to your brain. And then season two, we sort of worked on a theme, and the theme was really decisions and the choices that you're forced to make once you are a family. Some mundane and small, others have life-changing after effects, you know, so the small and the big decisions, and also the managing the needs of the family once you are your own little family unit. So it was about sort of decisions, and it was also about home. You know, it was more sort of an interior theme of what home means once you're a family unit.
Your show is also part of this bigger wave of shows about the costs of motherhood, programs like Catastrophe and SMILF and Working Moms. The New York Times said that these shows, along with yours, are workplace comedies with the workplace redistributed to the home.
Yeah.
Rom-coms where the romance is maternal. I thought that was so insightful, this idea of domestic labour.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's something that's always been, we've been told that domestic sphere is not interesting.
Right.
And for Alison and I in particular, we find that often the most mundane stories can be the most heroic. And we wanted to shine a light on that, because what mothers do is incredible. And whether they are stay-at-home mums, or whether they're running their own business, or, you know, whether they're struggling to be a mother, whether they don't even, you know, there's so many stories of women that don't bond with their child. Like, it takes years. We wanted to explore all those stories, whether it's confined to the household or whether it's outside. But yeah, and we've also heard it defined as a traumedy, which is quite fun.
Ooh, as well. How do you feel about that?
I like it. I think it's fun. I mean, that, you know, we've always wanted to sort of illuminate what's in the darkness, or what's been kept in the dark. I think that's where Australians find comedy, and, you know, I mean, so do the English and increasingly the Americans. But we were also very inspired by the new sort of American half-hour comedy, which is essentially a dramedy. We sort of came out at that time when those shows like Better Things and Louie and Girls, I mean, we were obviously following Girls and Transparent, but we were really inspired by those shows and the way that their tone carried across not only just the dialogue and the plot lines, but also the aesthetic. And that's something that it's not even been a struggle for us, because the ABC have been so incredibly supportive, but we always wanted the characters to look real. We wanted Audrey to have messy hair, and we didn't want her to have lots of makeup, because it just wasn't realistic that you don't have a newborn and blow dry your hair. You just don't. And we wanted the clothes to be creased and crushed and lived in, and sort of, I mean, that's the way that Al and I are. And we're really proud that we managed to get that through, and we had no pushback from the network. And I think if it had have been, you know, one of the more commercial networks, we might have, you know, we work very closely with our DP, and we want it to look dark. We don't want it to be overlit and as much natural light as possible. And yeah, I think that's been really important for us.
Yeah, the show definitely has that lived in texture of like being trapped in the house with a tiny baby. And I think it's so interesting, because so many of the dilemmas have no resolution.
Yeah.
How do you dramatize those tiny moments of everyday life? How did you deal with these problems in the writer's room?
Well, we really sort of think about what issues we want to address. One thing from season one was that what seemed to resonate with audiences were the darker moments, whether it was the moment on the bus when Audrey was crying, or when Sophie wet her pants. And, you know, that's what people really like. So we did feel a commitment to sort of keep pushing the boundary a little bit. We don't necessarily always want resolutions with our storylines. We kind of want, because that's not the way life works.
No, it doesn't feel that way, does it?
No, you just, some things you never resolve, and that's okay. I think also this was the first script that Alison and I wrote. The pilot was the first script. So we haven't really learnt screenwriting, in the way that we're not sort of following any structure.
Great,
and I think
throw
that,
it away.
That may have helped us in some ways that we don't, we just sort of tell the stories that we want to tell.
Great to speak to Sarah Scheller, co-creator of The Letdown, second season streaming on ABC iView. I really like this show. It's very good. I wonder sometimes if it is as sparkling as the shows it's referencing, like Better Things. Mm-hmm. But I love that they are innovating this subject matter, this perspectives of confused, baffled parents on the small screen and a bit of absurdity. I'd love them to push even darker, even kookier. I'll be interested to see if there's a third season.
I like it as well for what it's worth. Yeah, The Letdown season two is just dropped on ABC iView and ABC TV. Thanks so much, Lauren.
Thanks, Jason.
That's Lauren Carroll Harris, our resident TV critic here at The Screen Show. You're listening to The Screen Show. I'm Jason DeRosso, and this is ABC RN.